The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
Welcome along to the GAR. This is the football show on a Wednesday this week. It's a special show. We're bringing you, we're kind of in no man's land in between the semi-finals and the final. And I'm delighted to say our special guest today on the GAR is Kieran Donaghy. Kieran, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Willie. Thanks.
How are you feeling? How's the fallout? Is it nice to get out of Kerry?
No, we love being in Kerry. No, there was no, you know, there was no real fallout. It was kind of more... kind of almost just a kind of disappointment around the county, because we showed good promise in the earlier part of the year, and you know, we were up and down the league as usual, but we were playing good football and we were kind of finding our way small, because it's a young team, so you're always going to need to kind of find your way for certain parts of it. So it's just, it's kind of just disappointment of, it's weird. You know, I was knocked out of the championship on a win in Killarney. You know, it's just, it's weird just trying to take it all in, because normally you know, it's like the Galway game. You play bad, you don't win, you're out, you go home. Whereas we went on into Clonus and kind of got a dramatic draw, and then, you know, and then you win in Kildare, and you kind of find out, we were kind of finding out halfway through the second half that it wasn't going there. You knew from
you
the crowd.
Getting, you knew from them.
You just knew from the deadness after a while that the result isn't going away, and then you could
that must have been a bizarre feeling to be on the field in a championship game, knowing that this is just a waste of everybody's time.
I was up in the stand at that stage, but it was just a weird kind of sensation around the place. It was, you know, it's something that's never happened to many teams before, that they finished with a win. I'd say it might have been only us this year that finished with winning a game, being knocked out of the championship. But that's a new format, and we knew what we were signing up for to a degree. It was all new to us, obviously, but you know, we paid the price for lack of performances when they were needed, yeah. I suppose.
And what do you put that performance against Galway down to? Like, cause, I mean, Eamon Fitzmaurice was getting a lot of criticism, and we'll get on to a bit of that in a while, but like, I mean, for playing a sweeper, and Kerry people seem to be obsessed with the sweeper, but Dublin played Galway and they played a sweeper, and they're seen as tactically smart. So like, why is Eamon getting destroyed for now? The performance was terrible, so I suppose we'll have to get to the bottom of where that performance came from. I suppose it's both.
But the easier one to highlight always is the manager. You know, that's the way it is in the Premiership now. It's kind of the way it's going in the GAA now. Like, if something goes wrong, it's the manager. And yeah, you know, he made a call and a tactical decision. But you know, I think, you know, we said it afterwards, as a bunch of players, put up your hands if you did your job today, or you did well, and there wasn't too many hands up. Do you know what I mean? So no matter what tactics you're playing, or no matter what approach you have to a game, if you're at the level of fight and determination that you need to win a championship game, that kind of desperation, and whether it was the fact that we knew it was a knockout, or but look, we've had them performances before.
Were you complacent maybe against Galway? You always beat them easily.
No, there was no complacency, because we knew how good they were, and they gave us a good licking below in the league, and you know, so we knew it wasn't going to be easy. It's just it's you know, even the very successful team that I was on in the early days, we got 6 finals in a row, and we came up the following year trying to go for 7 finals in a row, and Down beat us in a very similar day, very wet, bad conditions, poor crowd, and you know, it's not a good enough excuse, but it's just the facts of it. I go back to our losses in kind of quarter final games in the 3 we've had, or Down, Donegal, and Galway, and all very similar circumstances. Yeah. Quarter final, Croke Park, small crowd, and you know, just the lack of the lack of performance that brings us, maybe from the high coming from Munster final in the new Parky Cueve with 30 or 40,000 there and a good buzz.
Good buzz, but you got a handy one. And you
oh,
could,
very handy, yeah.
You,
very
see, you
handy.
Could play football and you played great football against Clare, but Galway weren't letting you play football. And are you able to, do you find it difficult to snap out of that, oh, well, we're playing great football now, to today we're not going to be able to play great football?
Yeah, I think that's probably a learning curve that we're going to have to kind of wise up on and smarten up on, is that certain days it's not going to go for you, the weather's not going to be great, you know. That doesn't mean that you can, you know, that anything that you can use any of that as an excuse. I think we have to kind of get to a place where it doesn't matter where we're playing, what we're playing, that, you know, that the players, whatever about the management, that the players actually demand the performance out of you, and that you're not going to, you know, you're not going to be the guy that doesn't perform for the team today. And to have 13 or 14 fellas not performing in All-Ireland quarter final, you know, including, you know, there was one or two guys that could put up their hands and say they played a 7 or 8 out of 10. Like, you're not going to win any championship game, no matter what tactics, no matter what the weather, you're just not going to win.
Yeah.
So what the reasoning is for that, you know, we planned well, we prepared well, we were going well, training was going well, and I suppose it was just that, look, we just weren't maybe just at that kind of pitch as a team that you need to be in. You know, maybe Galway had that bit more desperation. They hadn't beaten Kerry in a long time in the championship, and, you know, they knew they had a good team this year. They were very competitive, very good in the league. So I'd say they kind of, you know, almost fancied their chances coming in, and we were probably, as you said, not being tested in a few weeks, where they had a good bit of a battle to get through to where they got to. But look, that's sport. At the end of the day, you can be trying to figure it out all day long. Sometimes there's just no explanations.
Yeah. So were you surprised you didn't get on at all in the Galway game? Because you started then against Monaghan and you had been coming on, and you'd imagine that Galway game was, you know, tailor made for you. It's not like you've a bad record against Galway. It's the opposite. Like, I mean, what was said to you afterwards? I'm sure you were disappointed with that.
I was disappointed, but I was only disappointed. I was more disappointed by just, I was disappointed the same way as everybody else, and it wasn't because I didn't get on. It was because why did we not perform today? That was what was bothering me all that evening, all that night, was where did this non-performance come when you're putting on a Kerry jersey in the championship in Croke Park? So I think that was the most frustrating thing for me. You know, they were going to bring me on, then when the backs got injured and they had to bring somebody else on and whatever. But,
all right,
you know, I probably could have been in earlier in a way, but it was just, you know,
That
happens now with the six subs, which is something they need to look at, because the way teams are training now and the way the pace of the game is going, like, six probably isn't enough, like, you know what,
Jesus.
I mean,
if Dublin started getting more than six, and with a big squad, the weaker counties would be screwed on that, you know.
Maybe so, but I just think just the way the pace of the game is going, no matter what level of skill you're at, no matter what level, just actually getting, you know, just teams out there playing against Dublin in the Leinster Championship, and they're struggling as well, but they're probably struggling because they're tired and they still do have fresh guys on the bench. They mightn't be at the 90, they mightn't be at the skill level of the guy that's starting, or they mightn't be as good, but, you know, when they come on, that they're fresh and they're going to give you something. Whereas, you know, I just think with the speed of the game and the way it's going, I just think it's, you know, I think it's exciting to see guys come on, and you saw it in the hurling this year, guys coming on making a change. You see it in the football all the time. So just, I think the more that can happen,
maybe in and out like basketball. But what was said to you then? So what were the conversations then in the week leading up to Monaghan? Because you didn't have much time to feel sorry for yourselves. You were straight back out against Monaghan, and you've gone from not being used at all to starting.
Mm-hmm.
How did those conversations go with Eamon?
There was probably, I was probably trying to make sure that we were ready for the Monaghan game in my talk after the game with the boys and stuff. So just, I would say he probably just said at this stage of the game, you know, we didn't really function up front in the Galway game, and I'd say he was just kind of like, you know, I'd been going quite well in training. I played well against Clare and Cork for a few minutes that I got on in both of them games, but, you know, I was doing well in training, which is the ultimate test, and which is what they're looking at three times a week. So,
yeah.
I just think he wanted just a bit of a focal point in there, and to change it up and to freshen it up, and to give us that option that when you're playing against a kind of, you know, well structured team, that you can still keep them honest by throwing the odd one in over the top. So, I just think they just wanted to kind of just maybe look at a different angle. I was delighted, obviously, to get the call, because, you know, when you're coming back in after the winter I'd put down with the basketball and you're not playing league games, your chances to actually get on the team and play well are quite limited, and that's the gamble you're taking. And I was very lucky I was able to do that for the last 3 years, because I was able to get 3 years added onto my football that I probably wouldn't have got if I had somebody going, no, you have to be back in November on the beach in Banna, or you're not being a part of the squad. So I was very lucky that I got to be able to do it that way, and that the team were accepting of it, and that the management were accepting of it. Of course that I was inside doing the weights with the boys twice a week, you know, but I wasn't actually on the pitch with them for a lot of the year. I was playing basketball, keeping my fitness and my sharpness up that way, and, you know, I'd say it was just to kind of come back in the best shape possible. So I was actually lucky to be able to do that. So to get out and get a start above in Clone, it's a historic venue, and to go against one of the best teams in Ireland as Monaghan are, was a great thrill for me.
Yeah, it must have been. So are you going to do the basketball thing next year, or?
Oh yeah, no. Oh yeah, I'd be playing basketball.
And will
yeah.
you play league games with Kerry? Or
I don't know what I'll do.
I was trying a different angle here at that one.
I don't know what I'll do. I'll be playing basketball anyway. I'm training with Stacks and finishing Stacks training, trying to get down to the odd basketball session afterwards, because they're starting pre-season now. So,
but you haven't decided then whether you're going to go back with Kerry or not, or there'll be a new manager, whether you'll be asked back, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No. I'll be probably kind of making up my mind now in the next few weeks, and just, you know, if it was I was talking to Billy Holland, the Munster player, because as I said earlier on, we were doing the pitch for them below Munster, and I was talking him through what the pitch was going to be playing like against London Irish last Friday night, because it was just finished. So I was kind of saying it'll be a bit soft or whatever, and then, you know, he was like, oh, will you be going back next year? And I says, I'll see. I was like, what age you know, Billy? He was like, oh, I'm 33, and I just signed a 2-year extension with Munster. And I was like, well, I'm 35 now, and if some fella came up and said, will you sign a 2-year extension with Kerry, and that was the only thing I had to worry about, I'd probably snap their hand off it, because the buzz had been in there, the buzz of seeing the young talent coming through, trying to help them, and you're learning something off them all the time as well, and you're learning, you know, new techniques and the nuances that we were talking about, and fat foam rolling and bang stretching and all that stuff that when we came in it was new, but you're learning something new off them all the time, so it's very exciting, and they're very positive, young, good footballers, so it's good to see. And if it was a straight up football decision, then you'd know work and you'd know family commitments and you'd know that kind of stuff, it'd be kind of an easy enough decision. But when you actually weigh up your age, you know, what can you bring to the team next year? Can you actually help them go somewhere? And is work, you know, I've been kind of, you know, nearly, I went in there 3 years ago into work on the kind of premise that it was my last, oh, it'll be my last year, no, you know? And the boss is like, oh yeah, well, no, enjoy the year, no, but, you know, we're flying, thank God, so get to the certain point. And I was like, oh yeah, yeah, no problem, in following year, I might go back again.
But doesn't it work no harm, like, you're in sales having you as a Kerry footballer rather than as the retired one, or do they prefer just to have you, that your name is still there, and they just prefer to have you when they need you, rather than you saying, look, well, I can't because I have to do this or recover or whatever?
Yeah, I suppose there's probably a bit of both in it, you know, when you're trying to prepare now the way you have to prepare, the way the level of professionalism has gone to, stuff has to take a backward step. That's the facts of it. Hillary's at home with Lola Rose and Indy, and she's brilliant, so I'm very good that way, and she was all about me for going back next year, kind of whatever you want to do, that she'd carry the kind of bit at home. But she does have to carry the can, because I'm gone 3 nights a week, I'm gone 2 mornings a week, so she's dropping him to school, she's putting him to bed, all the stuff that I can't do.
And then the days you're not training, you're away in the car because you're on the road.
I'm trying to get my work in. So, but I'm lucky with work, like, you know, that, like, last night I finished extra and I came up here last night so I could get a full day done around Dublin work wise so I do a bit of that as well, but it's trying to balance everything.
And what does Hillary say? Is she encouraging you to go back, or is she kind of thinking you've enough?
She's very much on the kind of whatever, like, and she said to me last year, like, are you happy, like, you know, to go back? And I says, I am, like, you know, I said I had a good year last year, I'm, you know, I'm fit, I've no real injury concerns, I love being a part of the group, I can come back in March after my basketball season, I come back in very fresh, And just excited to get back in with the group. And you're getting back in April, and you know the time when the league is finished and the championship starts to come in, everything gets heightened. So I'm landing straight into the middle of that, which suits me down to the ground. And so yeah, no, it was it'll be kind of just sit down and kind of take it all into consideration, really. And
yeah.
And
so you won't make up your mind until the new manager is announced. That's been announced in October. I was reading that they're going to make a decision early enough.
Yeah. To be honest, I think I'll probably make up my own mind, because you know, whether a manager comes back and says, "Kieran, look, we don't want you. Thanks for your time for your 14 years, but we're going to go in another direction."
Yeah.
Or whether he says, "Oh, Kieran, will you come back? Will you do the same thing as last year?" I'm kind of giving myself another decision then to make. I know he wants me back, and I know I can probably still do something for the team in some capacity. But
sounds like you're done. Sounds to me like you think you're finished.
It's kind of hard to. You know, I don't want him coming at me, or whoever the new manager is saying it, and equally, I don't want him coming at me kind of going, "Thanks a million, Kieran, but you're okay."
Yeah. You say, "I'm going to commit." Panel announced.
Yeah, where am I? And it'd be like back in the day, you'd be waiting for the letter to come through the door to see if you made the panel.
Do you remember? I was actually laughing at that yesterday. My mother handed me an envelope from the house, and it was different stuff that had been up in my room. And one was 1997, "You have made the Leash under 21 panel." Yeah. There was a letters used to come out to the house.
You'd be waiting for the letter. the postman would be told.
You don't get letters anymore, do you?
There's a letter from the county board. No, unfortunately not. But the excitement when you got your first. Feel like was big. Like,
what do you get now? What do you send out? A WhatsApp if you're included on that? That's what how you know you're on the panel.
I'd say so. Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah, WhatsApp.
I'm out of the game a long time. You mentioned the young fellas, and I was in City West the other morning, interviewing the Limerick hurlers after winning the All Ireland, and I spoke to Kyle Hayes, and he looked fresh enough. He was just out of the pool. Did a recovery session the morning after winning the All-Ireland, and I'm thinking, my God,
yeah,
like this game's, but he knows no different. Do you know what I mean? I mean, Shane Dowling was around and he had a hangover and there was no pool. It was just a difference. Like, are these fellas just a completely different breed, and do you have to adapt to, you've probably adapted right along about the change in commitments and stuff?
Yeah, I've had to adapt as it's gone along. You know, as you say, you've been kind of looking at the outside, and then you're witnessing this kind of stuff, guys doing pool sessions afterwards, like, you know. But you know, the new guys they're taking the professionalism to unbelievable levels. You know,
and it has to be said, they want that, don't they?
They don't know about William Kirby retiring in 2005 because the crack was gone out of it. He couldn't go on the latch before league games. So these guys, they absolutely know none of that. They're probably in the gym for the last 5 or 6 years. They're all like, Hayes was unbelievable the last day, but the size of him and the physique of him around the place, do you know what I mean? And you know, that's come from 4 or 5 years in the gym. That hasn't come from out in the backyard and pucking the ball off the wall, which is where a lot of us kind of came from. That kind of I was slagging when young fellas going in the last day, a great wing back, John Sheehan from Lower Rangers. One of my first sessions in, he came in with a roll. He was a plasterer. He came in with a roll with cheese and coleslaw and a bottle of fizzy Lucozade, like, into the dressing room. And I was saying to one of the young lads, if I land in next Tuesday night just for the crack, with a roll and sit down in the corner and open up the canister or the bottle of Lucozade and start hitting the roll before training, I'd say they'd be looking over at me, the young fellas, we're on your man's last day. He's finally gone.
It's a classic.
But yeah, they're brilliant in fairness. Like, you know, and that's the way they do it, and more power to them if that's, you know, that's you know, he's probably already thinking, and this is why I would say he's probably already thinking county championship next week or the week after with the club, and I don't want to be picking up injuries. And he's probably looking at it, they're a very young team, they want to try and dominate like the Dublins of now and the Kilkennys of back in the day, you know. And to be honest, we probably all thought Galway were going to go into that period of dominance because they were so good last year, and they were obviously very unlucky the last day. But you know, Limerick are probably saying to themselves, no, we've very young profile, very good team. Can we stay hungry and can we stay sharp and can we try and put it back to back together? And that's their goal straight away. And I'm sure they've, you know, even on all the teams we were on, win or lose in All-Ireland the following day, you'd be starting to look forward. That'd be it. We have to improve this. We have to get better at this. You know, this wasn't good enough this year, that's why we lost. Or, you know, yeah, we won this year, but we got away with that. But you're already looking. The winner should be already looking at what's next. And I would say Kyle Hayes is probably a winner, and he's probably looking at what's next. That's probably
thinking ahead. Maybe. Well, he's 20 and he was man of the match in the All-Ireland final. David Clifford is 19. Is he 20 yet? He's 19.
No,
I think he's
19.
He's come on to the Kerry senior panel this year. He's a nailed on all-star as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Scored that goal against Monaghan that you got your hand to. Mm-hmm. What a finish, like out of nowhere. Eamon Fitzmaurice told me after the Clare game, I was down at that, he said he's a very similar type of personality to you. You know, he's a larger than life kind of, like, good fun to be around. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, how did you find him, or how well do you know him now?
Well, I took money off him in the golf course last Friday morning. Of course he is. He's good at anything. What a sickener, yeah. They asked him to, we're having an old sing song after one of the games this year, like, you know, and David, sing a song. And I turned around to the fellow next to me. He'd be brilliant at this now, right? Oh, he bless Luke Kelly Classic. But I'd probably say when I'm older that I was lucky enough to play with him.
Right.
For a season and be in there in the mix in you know, that Clonus game is probably be something that I'll be kind of, you know, that'll probably be on his highlight reel for the next 15 years.
Oh, yeah. And you're involved in it.
My pa will be involved in it. But no, he was again, he must be just this new generation, so mature, you know. But he's been a kind of serial winner anyway with minors and Hogan Cups, and that's all he knows is performing on the big day and playing well. And I never had any doubt in him, but as soon as you start to kind of be around him, I really stopped. I didn't even talk to him before the Kildare game because I was kind of in his ear before the Monaghan game, you know, just saying this is going to be, you know, that we'll be tested here big time. And but I looked over after 5 minutes and he was handling his own business over there, so I didn't need to.
Because he's huge. Like, yeah, I couldn't believe how big he was when I shook his hand, and he's huge hands as well.
Yeah, no, he's a big man. He's got both feet and he's smart and he's brave and he's a good teammate, and he's kind of like Gooch that way. Like, he'd pass to the right guy all the time.
See a pass,
he's not going to be out there trying to kick 10 or 11 points every game. So he's... it's great that he's Kerry, and it's great that we'll you know, the people of Kerry will get to see a footballer like of his ability coming through in the next few years.
I think the most impressive thing about him is some of his finishes are from tight angles, like a corner foot. You know, these traditionally nippy, small little fellas who can turn, score in a turn from tight angles. Mm-hmm. Then he can get boomers from the 45. Then if he looks up, he can give a crossfield pass out of nowhere. He can field. There's obvious weaknesses to his game. Like, there's no chance of Clifford buying into the hype and going off the rails or anything. He's too smart for that kind of thing, is he?
Oh, unbelievable. Yeah, he's streets ahead that way, really. You know, he's a kind of...
Like, football is his life, is it?
Oh, he's hugely into it. Absolutely hugely into it. And he's really professional in how he goes about things. And when he speaks... you know, he's already carrying it. Like, when he speaks, you know, when an older guy in the panel will talk, you see everybody listening to him.
So he's talking in dressing room already.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he's a barn leader, and he was outstanding for us this year. And when, you know, there was no game you could look at him and say where you didn't do what you had to do. He was magnificent, thankfully for us, and probably without him we would have been under massive pressure.
Yeah, there's no doubt. So were you surprised then to move on to Fitzmaurice that he resigned, is probably the starting point?
Was I surprised? Probably not, because I knew where he was. You know, we obviously have a good connection, and probably since 2004, since I came into the thing, he's been a friend, a selector, a teammate, a manager. You know, we've gone through all the levels that you need to go through with a fella. So, you know, I knew last year he was disappointed, and that he was, you know, that I suppose the bit of heat that was on him, and, you know, how that was going to reflect on us. I know he was thinking about all that last year, but he was going to give it another rattle, and, you know... And I think when it didn't work out this year was probably, you know, I wasn't overly surprised about it that way, because like he said, he just, I think it's a pity in a way, because he's still up there as the best for the job, but it's kind of like he's stepping away so that the young team can just get a bit of pressure, because if he was there again next year and there was a sweeper played or we didn't play well, it'd be all fired back at him.
Yeah. And had the public turned against Fitzmaurice to that degree?
I don't know, absolutely certain certain members have, and some people will be hanging their heads in shame about the way they talk and spoke about a guy who's not getting paid, who's putting his life on the line, who's a principal of a school, has a young daughter and another child on the way. to a fella that gives the hours that he gives to try and make sure Kerry are great. Does he make mistakes? Of course he makes mistakes. Who doesn't end up, who doesn't make mistakes in the world?
Yeah.
People inside offices and banks making mistakes all the time. There isn't people writing letters into you saying they're going to do this and do that and do the other thing. So it's, and that's, we've all gotten that over the years. That's nothing different. And I think it was nice for him to even highlight that, just to kind of get it out there. And you hear other managers coming in going, oh, we all got it as well. And James Horne's mayor going, oh, I got all these letters. And it just shows you that they're out there and that these people are out there and that they've, you know, that's what they have time to do in their lives, to sit down and do this, you know, when yeah. they have absolutely no idea, concept of what it takes to be a manager of a top team these days. They have no concept of the time that goes into it. They have actually no clue about football, which is, these forums are hilarious because the stuff that's talked, if you actually look at them, the yeah. stuff that's talked is that biggest raw nation of all time. It's like stuff from back in the 1970s. They're the same fellas that are above in the stand when you're playing against 15 men behind the ball. They're saying, kick it in.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It doesn't make sense no, to no. in. But, you know, that's what he was... But so, yeah, look, it's you know, I'm not surprised by him going, and I think he will be a loss to the group, because that group would have had massive time for him. But look, maybe freshening it up is no harm either for a young team that they get somebody else in. So it's, you know, it, only time will tell whether it was the right decision for Kerry football. But I do think his kind of hand was forced into it, that if he had the backing of the public and people left him alone with a young team and just let them bring him through, I think he would have been the right man, you know, to be given a Cody like kind of, you know, time frame to be in
charge. And mm. he would have liked it long term. He was happy in his routine because his summer's off.
Yeah,
and stuff.
I think so. I think he was. You know, everybody's massive respect for him. He's an excellent speaker when he speaks. You know, attention to detail is brilliant. So I think he would have been the right kind of fella to if there was a perfect scenario. You know, like if he was coming in now.
Yeah.
Without the last 6 years, if he was just coming in now after coming on off the back of two or three Hogan Cups and people saying, oh, get Eamon Fitzmaurice to be the manager, he'd be brilliant.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he'd be the right guy coming in now to take this team on. But there's other guys down there that can do the job as well. And, you know, we just, you know, Tim Murphy now and his selection committee will sit down and look at the candidates and talk to them and see what they think is the best option for Kerry going yeah. forward.
You mentioned the letters that we all got them. I actually never got a letter. I got to the point where I swear
you
didn't.
You might have never got something for playing in the pitch, but you definitely got something for what you said.
I've never got a letter. I got to the point where I wanted a letter. I want someone to send me one of these letters.
I'll send you one now, depending on how this interview goes.
You've got them.
Oh, I have, yeah.
But you've been a fan's favourite. Like, I mean, at what point of your career would you have got them?
After probably losing in All Ireland along the way.
A final,
yeah. They're just not happy about it, and you might have done something, or you didn't do something, or you should have done something, and you know.
And these are handwritten letters, or handwritten,
yeah.
But not signed.
It's scabby enough writing, too, like you'd know that. Whoever's writing, it's probably a bit all over the shop. Do you know what I mean?
But right.
Look, that's the...
Well, you'd want to be really to be sending letters.
That's what
like
I mean.
That,
that's what I mean. Like, if you're sitting above in the room and the best thing you can do is think to write a letter to slate somebody else who's putting in all these hours to try and represent their county to the best of their ability, and that they don't play well in the day or they don't perform, and your answer is to write a letter to them, is it kind of sums up the person. And that's why I think genuinely people that get them don't pay much attention to them, but they still hurt. They obviously do. You know, you're still... You know, you're still kind of, it still stings a bit because you know how much you're putting into it, but you feel this person has the right from your own county to kind of, but look, that's, you know, yeah. I think in every walk in life you're going to get criticism, and it's how you handle criticism is very important and how you go forward in life.
Yeah. The Kerry fans I want to talk to you about, like I went to college down Tralee and I have friends from Kerry, and I love their attitude. It's cocky, and that's only based on what you've won in the past, but it's not arrogant. But there must be a section of Kerry supporters that has moved into that arrogant section. These are the ones that send the letters. These are the ones that don't go to Croke Park unless it's a final. These are the ones that shout abuse at the managers. Like, I mean, we see with Dublin now, they're winning so often, there was only 54,000 people at the Galway game, an All-Ireland semi-final, because they're just getting that. Like from the 80s, from when you were playing, historically, you were guaranteed a final and a win. So it's just a knock on that you get poor support up to Croke Park because historically they just, I will wait for the final. That was the joke.
Yeah.
But Dublin might be heading towards that direction now because it's like supporters know they're going to be at that level. Like, is there an element of the Kerry support that kind of cockiness, which is a good thing, has moved into the kind of arrogant kind of sphere?
That belief that's in Kerry that we're always going to be there and we're always going to give it a crack. And you know, the fans not going to games is frustrating, I won't lie, for players.
How do you get them back?
Unfortunately, I think the only way to get it back is kind of what we're going through now, where it's 4 or 5 years we're having
a good lull.
That's it. Like, and they're not used to that in Kerry. I'm 2007 when we went back to back, I rang a school in Kerry that I had the cup, would you want me to call in? We had it last year. It's grand. We're very busy now. We're just back to school. We've loads going on. But you know what? You can bring it in next year.
Are you serious?
and I was just kind of like going, oh man, that's bad that it's got to that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Jesus. It's bad because I know if you landed up into Clare with the Sam Maguire into school, they'd be absolutely delighted. Do you know what I mean? So, you know, to go into games is a tough one. You know, I think back in the day, people made excuses to go to a game. You know, they got on the ghost train blowing Waterville at 12 o'clock at night, and they got up to Houston the following day at 12 o'clock and they have 12 hours and they got to the game and they packed their sandwiches and they came home afterwards and they went to the ghost. They didn't get home till Tuesday.
Yeah.
You know, whereas now it's a 2.5-3 hour drive. It's a 3 hour drive to Dublin and there's something on, or there's another game on TV that day that I want to watch that as well, or the World Cup is on, or whatever excuse. But people make excuses now not to go to the games.
It's not a culture for going to games down there. That's the.
But it's if you're talking about general stuff, it's just the way it's probably the availability of it too. It's probably the amount it's on TV, the amount it's on radio, the amount of coverage it gets. You know, you watch the old documentaries, you see the house with the wireless and there's 40 people around the house listening to the game. Like, yeah. That's because there was so little of it. It was everybody talking. Oh, John Moriarty now has the radio. We'll go down there on Sunday. And that was it. And everybody talked all week, whereas now we're getting it non-stop. We know everything about the teams. We know the build-up.
But I suppose Kilkenny Hurlers got it as well. Any team that's successful regularly take it for granted and they stop. You know, all the well-supported team, the fanatical fans, are Mayo, who haven't got over that line.
Correct,
you know?
Correct. Exactly. And you see it with Limerick the last day. And you
Limerick,
know, that's just it.
Even the Clare Hurlers fans switched off because they won in All-Ireland 13.
Yeah,
it's kind of like
a natural thing, like, you know, it's yeah, as you say, like when you're a successful county and they're just kind of used to it every, you know, three times a decade Kerry should come back with a few Sam Maguires, and sure, that'll be great and that'll keep us going and keep us happy and we'll go for the final, and that's the way it is. But I would urge people in Kerry in particular and in general to get behind the county and make excuses to go to games rather than the opposite. And they're like, we all remember those family days out where you were into the car and you'd flask the tea and you went up and watched the game. Like, you, people remember them, their life experiences.
Yeah.
We're sitting at home on the couch watching it. There's no life experience in that. No. There's no buzz, there's no atmosphere. And maybe the GA need to look at it and try and get people to come to the games. Ticket prices, where games are on. Should we have even been playing Galway and Croke Park this year? Like, more thought about that. How are we going to make this engaging that people are going to come to the game? You know, yeah. I think that's a huge thing. But just fans to get behind their teams. Like, even in Kerry, like, we've got such a young team now coming. They need 10 or 15,000 to come to Croke Park for All-Ireland semi-finals, quarter-finals. Like, the replay against Mayo last year, we had 5 or 6,000.
Oh, that was...
And you know beforehand...
It was a home game for Mayo.
It was. Yeah. You know it beforehand because the county board guys are telling you, there's no demand tickets, we've only sold 4,500. You're kind of going, 4,500? Like, that means Mayo are going to have 50, 60,000 up here.
Yeah.
And that's... It's a home game. And I don't think home, in a way, is appreciated enough in the GAA.
No,
I know you talk about Croke Park and Dublin, but look, that's an inevitable thing that's just going to happen because of finance or whatever. But home venue is so important, and it proved that way in the Super 8s. It was hard to go, you know, but like, just that whole thing of being in front of your own people on your own patch, you know the post, you know the ground, you have the crowd behind you, and the game is 50-50 and it's late and it's in the melting pot late on, and you just hear that surge of a crowd or a fella blocks down a ball and the Kerry crowd
that absolutely
goes.
Helps, yeah, sure, it's massive.
And I don't think people actually understand that, you know. The people that saying, I won't bother going to the quarter final against Galway, I'll go up to the semi final or I'll go later on, they're not thinking that these 15 guys that take the pitch actually need them out there. You're no good to them on listening into the radio, you're no good to them watching it on TV.
Yeah,
you know, it's never easier to get to a game. No, it's never been easier to get to a football match, but and everybody's living a busier lifestyle, and maybe I'm ramping on about this, but just to get people to, I just think they don't they underestimate the value they have when they actually go to a game.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe the fans.
Wait, just quickly before we finish up in this section, do you think the product, is this an issue? Now, I suppose it's not probably a good argument for you because you play really good football, but the Galway game was, it was the most bizarre game I've ever seen in my life. Mm-hmm. Like, the crowd were like, it was like being at a funeral for a lot of the first half. Mm-hmm. Like, we talked on the show here last week about maybe different rule changes, offensive marks, limit the hand pass, not allow four players back into your own half, you know, to try and bring some traditional structure back on the game, because fans are not engaging with the game. Now, I know Kerry have issues with not wanting to go, even if it was a classic.
Yeah.
But a lot of supporters are tuning out. Dublin fans, I think, are, because they know, right, well, this will be a routine for Dublin, win for Dublin. It's not going to be a good game.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's...
Do you think the game is going through a difficult period, or it needs help?
I definitely think it needs help. It definitely needs tidying up. The hurling is obviously taking the thing by storm this year, but there's a reason for it. There's 50-50 contests.
That's the thing.
They don't count turnovers. I looked at the Irish Times the following day after the Cork semi-final. There was a page of stats in the back of the Irish Times. No turnovers anywhere. It just wasn't even counted. I don't know, yeah. Do they count them?
Well, they'd be off the charts. You'd lose count, maybe.
Well,
but that's
maybe
it.
Well,
yeah.
That's what they don't. But what they're basically saying is they're putting it down to a contest, and if you're good enough, win it. And yeah. That's like football was played in the 70s and 80s and 90s, and everybody loved it. And fellas caught the ball in the middle field without really looking, turned and kicked it, and you go win it. And
yeah.
Like that, the Bomber and Mikey would always say to me, "Oh, sure, it was a great time to play. It was bait your own, man. You were away in a hack. You didn't have to worry about anybody else."
Yeah.
And that's a great place to go into, but
now,
you
some
know,
of that
we're,
in that
we're never,
era,
we're never
yeah.
going to get it to that.
Well, I don't. Do we want it at that? Because some of it was aimless. Now there's a happy medium there where there's good ball going in, constructive ball, but it's still a contest.
Correct.
You know?
But you're bringing in the offensive marks. Like we all that'll slow up the game. That won't slow up the game. What slows up the game is a fella catching it inside and four fellas around him, and he's horsing. He falls on the ground. The ball spills. Next thing, there's a free out. A hot ball or free out
and
or
then
whatever
they take
it is.
Their time on the free.
Exactly. And, yeah. and the whole thing is slowed down. So the offensive mark, like the midfield mark, has worked brilliantly well. Like if you had something inside the 21 for someone winning clean possession, now you'd have people kicking it in more. There'd be more contests in there.
Yeah.
But the biggest one, and you know, the biggest one, the Aussie rules that I bring in from the Aussie rules in the morning, I'd get rid of the black card because we've enough black. The Aussie rules is, we can learn a lot from them. They've learned a lot from us over the years. But you can look at an Aussie rules game. They're all massive men. They're taking it right to the edge. There's physical battles all over the place. The referee has no card in his pocket. He's no card. It's. We look at it Monday, and if you're acting the maggot, you're going to get found out. You'll be caught, and you'll get a proper suspension afterwards.
Right.
But we're not going to do anything in the day. You know. But the biggest thing they have, and to cut out the rubbish and to cut out it, because the black card, the purpose of the black card was brought in for cynical play late on to punish the opposition. Whereas what we have now is everybody saying, take a black card late on because it suits us. The ref has to come over and give you the card. He's to talk to you. We've our fresh man on. Whatever it may be, it suits the team. So how can it suit you to take a punishment on?
Yeah.
Whereas the Aussie rules one is the 50-meter rule. So if we saw bear hugs in certain games there and fellas are pulled down in their own 45, if that was brought up 50 metres from that foul and someone planked it over the bar, it's the only way to punish cynical play. If you win a free, Willie, and you're trying to take it and you're trying to get in a counter attack and it's late on in the game and I knock it away from your hand and then I tow it across the pitch and you have to run and get it and your man brings it up 10 yards or 14 yards or whatever, that's no good to you, because by the time you get it up there, they have everybody back.
Penalise it with a score.
And if it's inside the 21 and somebody, if you win the ball and you take your man on along the in line with 2 minutes to go when you're down a goal, you'll be pulled down now in the black card and you take your 14 yard free and by the time you go off there's 2 or 3 minutes gone.
Yeah.
If you're pulled down there, automatic penalty.
Yeah.
And that just takes away any of the rubbish. And how do we speed up our game and make our game more exciting? It's not black cards, where everybody after the game is giving out about black cards. Everybody's giving out about it. You as a team, when somebody else is getting a black card, it's normally at a time you don't want the ref to be stopping the game. You're trying to hurry it on, and then you have black cards being given out after 8 minutes because some fella has tripped some fella or whatever, and it's cynical.
A mistake,
you're gone.
And trip, or
do
like
you know
a
what
trip.
I mean?
It's just not a foul. And
exactly, it's just a foul. And if worst case scenario is if you trip a fella and you're kind of messing like that, ball goes up, some fella puts it down, planks it over the bar. Now you have your teammates coming to you going,
yeah,
will you cop on? Stop doing that. Whereas Whereas
you're punishing the individual with the black card, and that you can take one for the team. Whereas with the free, you're punishing the whole team. And
with the free, you'd have the team. You'd have the team correcting each other to take out sneaky play. You'd have teammates going, "Don't do that." Whereas now you have teammates, and they're saying, "Do that."
I was saying this in the podcast. Remember when you're in school and you'd be messing, right? And the teacher said, "Get out," and you'd go out, and everyone would laugh, and you're the class fool. And this I'm talking about myself here. And I'd wait outside, and I might hide in the toilets or whatever. And the next class, then this would be hilarious, me messing. Then another teacher go, "Right, you're messing, all of you stay back this evening." Suddenly there's an awful lot of heat. The atmosphere changes.
100%.
So instead of me being, "Oh, that was gas, will he mess?" I say, "What the hell are you doing?"
100%.
Like, I mean, and then you just don't do that anymore.
And it's so easy to ref. The ref just looks at it like, if you're slowing them down, which is whatever, which is late on in the game, and you're trying to get back, the opposition trying to slow you down, they're doing everything, they're pulling you down, they're knocking the ball out of your hand, whatever they're doing. If that's brought up, it makes does more scores, the game is more exciting, you're going to have more close games because it's easier to get back into a game now because you actually can cynical foul because you're being punished in the scoreboard. And you take away everybody talking on a Monday or on the Sunday game about, "Oh, this shouldn't have been a black card, that should have been a black card, this wasn't a cynical foul, that was a cynical..." Like, it was brought in famously for the Sean Kavanagh tackle on McManus.
Actually, it was brought in before that.
Maybe I might be wrong in that. But
it was voted in before that happened.
It was kind of said that this is what it's for. Yeah. This is why we've brought it in, is exactly for this, to stop this. But it hasn't stopped that, because that would still happen now in a game. If Tyrone were up 2 points against Manahan in the morning and Kieran McManus or Conor McManus rounded you, you'd be pulling them down.
Yeah.
Because you take your 14-yard free, I'll take my black card. We're still winning by a point.
That
drives people mad. And we're on about the experience and people going to games. That's a lot of the frustration. Is this stuff? It's boiling over. Like, if you're at the end of a game now and somebody's up 5 points, it's so frustrating the last 10 minutes of the game.
Yeah.
They're trying to hold on to it. The other throw going to get back. The over
even,
and back. That's
even
going
from
on.
The kickouts, everyone's being wrestled from the short kickouts now, which looks terrible as well. Like, I mean, and the black card doesn't help that. Although Conan made a very good point on the show here. The black card would fix that if all four lads bear hugging got blacks and you had all your subs on and you're down to 11 men.
You still
can get rid of that with the black, only they seem to turn a blind eye to this wrestling. It's almost an accepted part of the game now.
There's still going to be too much of, "Oh, why didn't they do, they should have done it in this game and that incident deserved it," and it's just too much over and back, and it's too much time out in the pitch is my problem. Whatever about the stuff after the game, it's too much time in the game. When we're trying to get back into a game and some fella pulls me onto the ground and now you want to have a 2 minute conversation with him and give him a black card, and you're saying, "Oh, well, you shouldn't have done that, now you have to go." And they're getting all their bodies back and he's smiling walking off the pitch.
Oh yeah.
Like what is rule like that still doing in our game? And we're trying to improve football.
Yeah.
Bring in the 50 metre rule. Any messing that's going on around the pitch, bring the ball up 50 metres. And like the Aussie rules, they don't make a deal of it. They blow the foul. You have the foul. Some fella knocks the ball out of your hand. He blows the whistle again and he says 50 and he starts running. And you get your ball and you run behind him. And if they touch you again, it goes right into the box and you have a penalty. Do you know what I mean?
Literally
bring the ball up, put it down, bang it over the bar. Now you get to pin him in. The crow get to go, "Oh, it's back to 4 points. Weave everybody up the pitch."
I'm sold on the 50 metre thing. I'm going to start my campaign today.
Great. You're
All right, we'll be back in a second. I'll get a prediction off you for the All-Ireland.
"Are you going to get up or are you going to stay in bed?" I said, "We have a game there about 3:30. If you wouldn't mind joining us." Didn't even stir, like, didn't even go for the bag. Took his lie in, took his extra 5 minutes. It was like the snooze button. Hit the snooze button for another 5 minutes. Rolled out of bed. 1-7 that day.
Right, well, listen, we're starting up the All-Ireland fever here, so I'll get predictions off you. We'll be doing loads of analysis next week. So I think, like, obviously Dublin are very strong favourites, but, like, you've obviously first-hand experience of how Tyrone are like in a final. And OHE were very strong favourites, I remember, and it wasn't Tyrone's greatest team. Mm-hmm. And I think arguably it was your greatest team, or as good up there anyways.
Yeah.
And they ended up beating you. Yeah. So, like, I mean, this is not a final. Obviously, Dublin can just think that, you know, let it even get into their heads because of the way Tyrone, they just have something about them in finals.
They do, they have something about them, but at the same time, Dublin are at a stage now where they're going for four in a row. They have a huge, we were going for three in a row the time they beat us. They have, I think they Dublin have just that, you know, they've been on the road longer and they've seen it all, and they'll have that confidence of how to break down the blanket from last year's game. But you're right, in essence, and this is why I still think it's intriguing, is the fact that Mickey Hart is good in finals. Mickey Hart will have them sussed. They'll be very sore from last year's defeat. They had him in Healy Park a while back. Didn't make much of a job of him up there. Lost by 3 points, but Dublin were kind of comfortable 3 point winners.
I think so, yeah.
I know you're saying they're taking that to Crow Park. What can throw it up in the air? A wet day, a bad ball. You know, Tyrone all of a sudden just have a bit more of a chance. I'd be honest in saying if it's a sunny and it's a beautiful day, Dublin are going to win handy. If it's a bad day and the ball is wet and it's just that kind of a tough scenario to play in, kind of like us in Dublin in 2015 where it was just lashing the whole game and it was 12-9 and it was,
yeah.
Tyrone are good in that.
Yeah.
And Tyrone will bring you down to their level. And if Tyrone got a good start with those conditions and they'd be allowed to get people behind the ball and turn you over and frustrate you, and a team going for four in a row starts kind of panicking, That's the intrigue, and that's why it's not clear cut as some people think. Obviously.
So we need to check the forecast.
honest to God, that's my opinion.
Yeah,
I think that'd have a huge bearing in the game. If it's a dry ball, Dublin with their movement and with Jason Sherlock's work with the forwards, and you can see now they're used to come on the loop all the time. Now they're coming out in the loop, they're veeing back door, they're catching guys out. The guys were getting used to switching off the screens. Now they're not taking the screen, they're coming out for the screen, but they're stopping and going back.
Yeah, no, I see. David Clifford does that a lot too, doesn't he? He shows for a ball and then doubles back.
And it's always been done, but you can see that theirs has been really worked on.
Yeah.
It's really like, you know, maybe they have it worked in a way that if the guy is right up behind you as you're running out, cut back in him, you know, and if he's a bit off you,
it's such an easy move, isn't it?
Yeah.
To pretend you're looping and he'll commit to it and then go back the other way, and it's just a hand pass.
Yeah,
they
got the first goal out of it the last day and in the semi final against Galway. I think Scully went in along the inline, hand passed it across the con, and he tapped it in.
Yeah.
But he was coming out on the loop and stopped him in back door. And his men were so tight to him that he wasn't ready for him to stop, and he was probably said, They'll come on the loop.
Yeah.
And so it's a new part of the game they've brought in, but
Dublin are adaptable, though. See, that's the difference. I think that's where you're not at. When Dublin played Kerry in the league this year, it was almost a throwback to the late 90s, early 2000s. Mm-hmm. Everyone was manning up in the first half. Now, second half lost shape.
Yeah.
The lads went off.
Yeah.
So Dublin can play football with you, and I think that's their preferred way they want to play.
Yeah, absolutely.
But if they want to play Donegal, they'll play the ball around. Kilkenny will get 50 possessions. He won't care about it until it's ready to break the line.
Yeah.
They adapt, and they're so big, and they're the best running team in the country, even though they don't really want to play.
Exactly. I know they can give it to you whatever way you want.
Yeah.
Whether you want to get physical with them, whether you want to get in their face, they're as in your face as anybody else that I've come across, which is what you need in the modern game. They won't be found wanting, whatever way you want to bring it to them. If you want to play football with them, they'll do that. If you want to get physical, they'll do that. If you want to get everybody behind the ball, they've obviously worked. They were cotton 14 against Donegal. You know, I could see them in the meeting the following year saying that won't happen to us again, and this is what's not going to happen to us. And you know, we have to be more patient, and we have to spread it out, and we have to use our power runners. And they're a hard team to handle, which is the reason they're going for four in a row.
You see JO's imprint all over their forwards, do you?
All over their game management. I don't know their setup. I don't know what he's doing with them, but in my eyes,
well, he's a forwards coach anyway.
I know he's a forwards coach, but I've never seen what they do in training, obviously. So it's, but I in my head, their game management, they remind me of a basketball team when they're coming up against this defensive zone. They remind me of a basketball team back in the day when there was no shot clock. You know, they'll pass it around. And eventually you'll say, geez, we're playing deep back in the day in the 60s and 70s before the shot clock came in, the 24 seconds or 30 seconds in college. Fellas would say, hold on a minute, we're playing defense for 2 minutes, forget this. And they'd start coming out, and next thing they'd pick you off.
So J.O. came around at the perfect time, really, for them then, do you know?
I think he did, because he's got the basketball IQ. You know, Joey Boylan, who is a great coach in Irish basketball, coached me in the Irish team, coached J.O. as well. And you know, there's so much transferable. But I think for the Dubs, you know, to have a player like Gio, who was obviously iconic and you know, their main man in 95, and you know, did the boom boom song and all
that.
So he was, you know, he was a legend. And you know, so when he's coming in, and I think he starts talking about screens and loops and don't take the screens, I think they're all just going, oh yeah, no problem, you know, if this is the way to go, this is the way to go. So he's carrying weight that way. But I just think, yeah, I do think his imprint is all over the team, with the way they play, with the way they handle zones, with the way they pass and they screen for each other. If they pass you the ball, if someone passes your man the ball, you can be sure he's running straight for you, so that the guy coming on the loop is
free.
There's decisions to make and everything.
So he'll put his hands up like,
and when he's putting his hands up to say, I'm getting out of the way, he's actually making himself bigger. Now I got to go around his elbow rather than go around his waist. So it's, I'm sorry, but it's brilliant. It's brilliant coaching. It's brilliant execution. You can coach all you want. Can your guys go out and execute it when the needs are most, and when the pressure is at its highest? Can you guys go out and execute what the management are doing? And I think that's where Dublin have excelled over the last four seasons, and you know, even before that. And you know, they have the stuff, and they must have massive inner belief in what they're about, and what way they're going to play this Tyrone team. But you know, Tyrone are queer hawks in the final, and a hawk is a queer bird.
tell us about Tyrone, like in the last, when their tails are up, like they're nearly reminding me of Westmeath. I've lost a few finals to Westmeath. When they smell blood, like, I mean, they're almost like become obsessed, and it's very hard to turn it back around from them. When
in 08 they did that to us. You know, the game was very much in the melting pot. We were up, they were up, and Duher got this ball and went down the sideline, and just, there was three fellas tried to clip him, and then he put it over outside of the right boot.
That was an unbelievable point.
It was an unbelievable point, but what it was is exactly what you're talking about. It was this, that after that, like, it was like bang, they were like the shark.
You were nearly powerless at that stage.
Yeah, they just, it you know, it actually, they ramped up from there, and we actually only pulled it back, and it was Declan Sullivan's shot in the last minute that Pecky saved and put around the post with his stud, that denied us the three in a row and won it for Tyrone. But you know, you look back at little bits in the game, and that was the bit where the game was kind of going 1 point, 1 point, 1 point, 1 point. We were going up and down, and next thing, they just got that score, and you could sense the crowd. And like you said, they smelt blood, and they have a lot of really good footballers in that Tyrone team. And you know, as I said, if they start well and the day is bad and it's a wet ball, you know, I give him a great shot. But unfortunately, and my family up there, if I think it's a lovely dry day and it's a great day for football, you know, I can't see Dublin being beaten. So it's kind of it's a tricky one to call.
Yeah,
as you said, I'll call it closer.
Call it closer when we see the 7-day forecast.
When I see the AccuWeather.
Come here, before I go, John Terry read your book. What was going on here? How did this come about?
Conor Hourihan over with Villa was, I've been talking to him for a few years, do you know what I mean, you know, wishing him well or whatever, just seeing his story going from the up through the divisions or whatever. And and then Terry signed with them the following few years. He was playing with Villa, like, you know, and you know, I'd be saying best luck, Conor, or whatever, and he'd be saying good luck in our games, obviously not when we're playing Cork. But there was, you know, I sent him over a book, and I sent over one, I gave him one for Terry as well, and I said, look, Terry isn't going to read it, but tell him, read the story about me getting dropped after the Champions League final with the Gwan Drogba comment from the fans afterwards. And I said he'd enjoy it, and next thing, so I took no more notice, I sent off the book, and then about 3 weeks later he put it up in his Instagram story, and he messaged me saying he read the Chelsea bit and that he found it hilarious and fair play, and he looked up the game afterwards and looked up a few highlights and stuff.
Really?
And yeah, so he's but yeah, no, it's, look, obviously he's been, you know, I went to my first Chelsea game in 2001 or 2000, I'd say, and he was just a young fella coming on the scene, and so he was, you know, I followed him all the way through, obviously. So yeah, it's nice that a bit of banter with the boys is good. But he's following me on Instagram now, and he's liking all my, people are sending me pictures of him liking my posts. It's like, why is John Terry liking a picture of your daughter?
I haven't been on, like, he's on Instagram, he's not on Twitter. I was thinking social media is a very dangerous place for John Terry to be on. I didn't realise he was even on Instagram until I saw that.
He's on Instagram. He's 4 million followers. He just put up yesterday, so there's a few people following him.
Right. Okay. Well, listen, come here. Thanks very much for calling into us, and we'll be keeping our eye out to see. I think the decision is that you're going to leave it at that, but we'll have to see. You're not. Yeah, you're there. Yeah, I think you're going to retire. I think you're going to retire.
You're retiring me, yeah? Do you think it's time?
I think from your... I think I'm just from hearing what I heard.
Do you think I should retire?
I think you should retire? No, I don't think you should retire. No, I think you should definitely go back. But then again, like, I mean, at the role you play, you could easily... You could do another 3 years at the role with the role you play with Kerry. Like,
yeah,
I mean,
should have Bomber played until 93. I saw a Bomber jersey from that 93 Munster final. Someone bought it to... before the 2014 final, before we were getting ready to go, and you know, you have your fans night, and this fella had a jersey over the rail that was nearly the width of the table there, and I was kind of going, what's that? Oh, that's, and it was number with the Bomber jersey 93, the official jersey, land sleeve, actually his jersey, like, was that wide? So they made him big in the last, but in 93 he was big. So but they made the jerseys absolutely massive anyway on you. Yeah. Know what I mean?
Listen,
so
you should wait until we get this offensive mark through. This could change your mind. This could be a huge bearing on whether you retire or not.
I'll be back like the Bomber in 2024. I'll be back in again, forward mark.
Just let it in.
Absolutely, yeah. Put on about 3 stone in the meantime. It'll be very hard to know.
Listen, thanks very much for calling in. We'll talk to you again. That's all we have time for this week. We'll be back, obviously, next Thursday with an All-Ireland preview show, as usual. And we're in the Sugar Club on Friday night, the night after that, the Friday night before the All-Ireland final. It's at 7:30. We're going to release details on how you get tickets for that very, very soon. All right, good luck.
Yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas, he gets such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we put him back in their houses for 10 years.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.